The way you say cardboard box is funny to me.
Cobble box.
Cobble box. Cobble box.
Cobble box. Who's got time for pronunciation?
Hey, welcome to episode 179 of Front Seat Gamer. I'm Nick. I'm here with Paul.
Hey.
And Blake.
Hey.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
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 How you doing, Nick?
I'm all right. Now, lately we've been kicking it off with questions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, I mean, when we kick it off with questions, we talk about what we've been playing first, I think. Don't we?
We can do whatever we want, man. It's
this it's feels a... like too much. This feels like enough room.
Or can do just straight questions first. Because yeah, then... Right, yeah. We won't get sidetracked by...
We'll let the questions sidetrack us.
Yeah, because that's going to be a... Yeah.
Yep. Okay, well, then let's kick off with some questions / comments. This is from a Mongolian. He says, or could be she. It's probably he. a rather controversial opinion, but in my opinion, Witcher 3 is greatly overrated. I'd say it's 7 out of 10 at most. While the story is really good, gameplay-wise, it was really poor. Many mechanics were super shallow, could be removed, and most people wouldn't care. I'd say 9 or 10 out of 10 for the story, setting, music, 2 or 3 out of 10 for the various gameplay aspects. When it comes to card games, there's something about cards specifically that pushes me away. If a game's mechanic is card-based, I'm instantly out. And for the game prices, I don't really care about AAA games, nor do I need to play games on release. With a focus on indie games and being able to wait for sales, I rarely pay more than 20 euros for a game. Well, that is a controversial thing.
But like a 7 out of 10 is all right.
Yeah,
7 like out that's of a pretty good score. Yeah.
I think what did they say that the story was?
9 or 10.
That's what people are thinking of when they think of the game.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're thinking of that, not anything else. Really.
And I would say that when he's talking about gameplay, correct me if I'm wrong, Mongolin, you can totally email us or comment and tell us how wrong I am when I make this assumption. But I'm guessing you're talking about systems. I'm guessing you're talking about the perk tree, which is pretty whack, or the crafting, which is really kind of annoying. Maybe even the combat, which is not the most polished. It's fine. I think the combat's all right.
Mm.
Not crazy polished. But I think that gameplay encompasses like movement and traversal of the world. It encompasses like exploration. It encompasses like the way actual conversations happen.
Yeah.
Like the playing out of the different quests, how they can branch out. And I think all of that stuff is very, very good.
Mm-hmm. I think,
although I will say that movement through the world, maybe not the best.
I think there's definitely like, the combat was never like amazing. The combat was never like, I just can't wait to get into the next fight with a monster. Right. I just can't wait. It's always like...
I've had some good fights. I've had some really interesting fights.
Yeah?
Yes. There was one... One of the first ones I did was one of the most interesting ones, where you had to... It was this big... The red miasmal. You had to throw down the runic circle, that spell prison thing, to even deal damage to the... But then you had to... It was like the way... If you read all the texts and stuff through the dungeon, it's like, yeah, throw that in the spell... thing. Make sure you've got this potion you've just drunk, and then use your I think Ard, the like knockback rune while the thing is in a circle, and you do a ton of damage.
Oh right, yeah.
And I thought that was
some of, yeah there's some
like combos yeah, really yeah interesting.
I don't remember many like it I don't remember many monster encounters where you had to like prepare too much that weren't like story like done through the story, like at the very start, right, you have to lead some sheep or something to lure a thing. That's the only time you ever do that. There's no just like monsters in the world where it's like if I throw down some sheep over here it's going to attract something,
right? Yeah, it's all part of a quest.
Yeah, it's all part of a quest.
None of that is dynamic.
But
there are multiple quests that have interesting setups for that sort of thing.
But it always felt like to me that like because it felt like because it's all just like quest based, it didn't kind of feel like it actually was real in a way. Like, it's not, you can't just dynamically do that in the world. It always has to be through a story.
Yes.
Like, I'm thinking, like, so I've been playing a lot of Dragon's Dogma.
Uh-huh.
And there's that big griffin that flies around.
Yes.
I have seen that thing just randomly swoop down and attack buffalo just in the wild with completely, I'm barely even, like, in the vicinity. It's like in the distance, and I just see that happen. And that's just happening, you know. But in The Witcher, it's like, you'd have to do that through that kind of thing happens through a mission where it's like you lead some stock animal to somewhere, wait a while, and then this thing will show up.
The thing is, there are dynamic systems in that game, but they don't give you the tools to support utilizing them. So, for example, you can see like Neckers or you know other animals, other monsters rather, attacking rabbits and deer.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah, they do.
But you don't have any capacity to
coax
the rabbits or deer or the location. You can't pick up a body, for example. No. I would also say that not liking a card game that is completely optional should not push you away from the game.
Yeah, I mean, I very much stated that I didn't care about Gwent.
Boy, I love Final Fantasy Witcher. I thought Final Fantasy VII was pretty good, but I couldn't get on board because they had the Mog game where you play the Mog house.
Yeah. Once I got there, that's when I put it down.
Yeah.
Thinking back, I didn't play that much of Witcher 3 at all. I did all of the side quests in the first area, then ran to the second area, picked up all the side quests, which dragged me into the third area where I started picking up the side quests, and then I just gave up. Like, so, I actually don't think I played that much of that game at all.
So you did White Orchard. That's the very first area.
Yeah,
small.
I think so.
Lots of little things in there, though. Then you did the second area, which is huge. Grabbed all those quests.
I grabbed the quests. I didn't complete any of them.
Okay. And then they consider the city a separate area, even though it was part of the second area.
Right. So I think that's the bit that I'm thinking of is the third part.
Okay, well, then there's a fourth area called Skellige.
Yes.
Which is like a mountainous island.
Yep. I did actually go there.
Okay.
I did go there.
You must have done some quests to get there, I think. I don't think you can just like be like, I'm going to Skellige now.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you do go there for a quest.
Yeah.
I do think, I'm sure I initially went there through a quest and then was like, all right, I'm not finished with the other area, so I'm gonna go back and do that.
There's so much.
Maybe I didn't go there.
It's a very dense game, and I was being quite thorough with my exploration and quest completion, and I was starting to outlevel the quests I was finding, which is a little annoying.
But I never minded that because I the stories were so interesting.
Yes.
I was completely fine with it. Yes. What was frustrating was near the start when you would get like quests that are like, you know, 10 levels ahead of you or something, and you don't really actually realize you're doing that quest until you fight the monster and it just one shots you.
Yes.
And then it feels very disconnected to be like, okay, I'll have to leave that and come back later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did this quest where I was like hunting a vampire in Oxenfree.
Yep.
And
Oxenford, I think.
Oxenford, yeah.
Oxenfree is a thing you say after Ollie Ollie.
Yeah. I think Oxenfree is also a game.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, I did a mission where I was like hunting this thing and going, it was like a real detective thing. And then I like cornered it in this barn and I jumped down into this barn and it just one shot me. And then I realized, oh, the quest is like, I don't know, level 20 and I'm like level 10 or something.
Yeah.
So I just went off and I was like, I'm just going to leave it in that barn for like months, I guess.
One thing I quite enjoy about that game is they don't have a lot of artificial damage scaling stuff going on. So compare it to like your World of Warcrafts or like a lot of other games where if something is significantly above your level, there will be like lots of additional penalties on your damage
and their
damage. Mm. You won't be able to hit, or when you do hit, it'll be like a tiny
fraction. Oh, I like a miss.
Fractional
like
glancing
Warcraft.
Blow.
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
of
yeah.
yeah.
And they'll like do huge multipliers on you.
Mm.
So you can, with good combat prowess,
yeah, feel good. Yeah.
And I did lots of like 10 or 15 level higher quests because I was like, I know I can do it. I just need to do it over and over and over and over again until I get it right. Thank you, I guess, Elden Ring for teaching me to just do something I hate until I'm done with it. I do also like that there are lots of different options for actually preparing to do a fight that will change the outcome of that fight. Like the specific concoctions and flasks and potions you have. Like, for example, you can fight a vampire and you can drink, I forget the name of the potion, it's like black blood, I think.
Yeah.
And it means that, like, when the vampire hits you and tries to, like, drink your blood, they take damage.
You also have to know that you're about to do this.
Yes.
As well. That's the thing.
But you can learn all of that generally through the quests.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm doing the quest. I'm learning, I'm fighting a type of vampire.
Yep.
I can go to the bestiary and be like, yeah, the vampire's, like, best way to think, like, they give you the things that are really effective against it, and do nothing against it, and then you can be like, great, I'll change my setup.
I always ran into the problem of hoarding stuff for when I really needed it, and then never using
for
it.
When you find the real vampire.
Yeah.
But this game doesn't have that.
It doesn't? I barely ever, I didn't drink potions very often.
Oh, Blake, this is a really, really forgiving system. Okay, so you have your potions, you have your bombs, you have all of these things, right?
Yeah.
They are not one-and-done consumables. They have, like, okay, so you have, like, let's just use your swallow potion, your standard heal potion. It goes, like, up to 2 or 3 uses, and then you can upgrade it to, like, 4, and then I think you can upgrade it to 5, or whatever it is. When you rest, if you have, like, I think an item called Alkahest in your inventory, it consumes that, and then refills basically all of your
potions. Yeah. But I'm talking about the things like you take before a fight. I often
those refill the same way, I'm pretty sure.
Do they?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure any sort of consumable in that like slot.
Yeah.
It just consumes and your alcohol
to
refill it all.
Maybe I was using it. This was a long time ago, but like I don't ever remember being like, okay, here's a fight I'm going to do. I'm going to like drink this thing. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Like, I don't really remember.
Maybe they changed it.
No, I don't think they did. Maybe I just don't remember. Because I absolutely did do the alchemy system and all that. But I don't remember it having as big an impact as I thought it would.
Okay, interesting. I use it quite a lot.
It was a long time ago.
It makes a big difference, I think. What I will say is they've got pretty harsh penalties for overusing it.
Yeah.
You start just taking damage from poison.
Yeah.
I will also say that despite the age of the game and all the updates they've done, there are still some like glaring issues.
Oh yeah.
I was in Skellige, and there's this huge mountain, and there's like a ship on top of the mountain, and I was like, cool, I'm gonna go and fight, like get up there. And so I was like climbing this mountain. It's really annoying to climb up the mountain because it's like a slippery slope, and it keeps sliding back down. I get up there, I discover there's basically no way to actually get to the ship, at least the way I went. So I want to go back down the mountain. And I end up sliding down into a hole I can't escape from.
Oh, no.
Yep.
So it was just like a big hole in the world.
Oh.
Not really a hole in the world, but like a big dip
in the terrain. Yep.
That is too steep on all sides for me to get out of. That it funnels you into.
That's annoying.
And so I end up in there and I'm like, great, got to load. Still a solid game. Let's go on another question.
Well, I remember, I think they might have fixed it, but you tell me. Does Geralt still just, like, fall downstairs?
No.
Okay, they fixed it then. Because when I was playing and you walk down the stairs, he would just, like, roll. Like, quite often. So you'd be, like, walking through, you know, someone's house or a tavern or something. Walking upstairs is fine. And then you go downstairs and you're just like, roll, 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 roll.
Oh, Witchers, their one weakness.
And it's that thing because like nobody reacts, so you just stand up as if like nothing happened.
I will say, theft in that game, we're talking about people not reacting.
Yeah.
Theft in that game is very silly. Like if there's a guard nearby, don't steal things. If anyone else is nearby, go ham. Go ham.
Yeah.
It's fine. No one seems to care. Let's go on to the next question. This is from Aiden Chichi. Said, I'm not sure what the conversion rate is, but here in Canada, AAA long ago left the realm of day one purchase for me. The cost is just way too high, and the launches are usually terrible. I prefer to wait a few months for the patches to be in and a sale to be put on, then I pick it up, which is what I did with Armored Core 6. You guys should play Armored Core 6.
That's the second time.
I've heard really good really good things about that game.
I've heard mixed things about that game. I've heard it's really fun in a stupid way.
That's really good, though.
But in a way that, like, Like, there's all, it gives you sort of these tactical decisions that don't matter.
Okay.
Like, you kind of, like, there's no real balance. You can put together, like, the most powerful mech pretty early on, and then nothing else really matters. But.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yep.
I more to the crux of the question, I'm putting aside the Armored Core 6 part for now. Do you guys buy day one? I think Blake does. You just bought Dragon Assault.
I did. No, that wasn't day one, though. That was day 8.
So that counts, Blake.
Does it?
That counts.
A week after,
and also,
it come out.
Also, you usually buy things before day one.
Yeah. I'm usually day minus 5 years.
Yeah. I will, if it's got good reviews leading from the actual launch version of the game.
Yeah.
I do wait for those before I buy now.
Yeah.
What's a game that you will buy day one that you just, yeah, I'm buying it day one?
Well, I mean, I did that with Diablo 4.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do
you regret it?
No, I don't. I had a lot of fun for about 20 hours.
Yeah, okay.
And
That was like a $130 game.
Yes.
20 hours for $130.
I'm not saying that the like value is there. I don't regret it, though.
Yeah. Fair. I would say almost any first-party Nintendo purchase on a day one is pretty safe.
Mm.
They are probably the most reliable developer in terms of stability and quality. That's my bias showing through. I don't care.
What was your last day one purchase? Was it Zelda?
It might have been Zelda. I think probably.
I think I bought that day one as well.
You still didn't finish it.
Still haven't finished it.
I buy most games months, if not years, after release.
Hmm.
The exceptions really are the first party Nintendo games. I did buy Balatro. And I've been playing Balatro.
But that was.
That was a couple months after it came out.
Yeah.
I might buy Helldivers at some point because people keep really love
that
game.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about that as well.
You need friends, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's so tough. Maybe not.
I'd be keen. The thing that puts me off Helldivers is playing with strangers. That's it. That's a lot.
Helldivers Trio, right here?
Yeah, yeah.
Right here?
Yep.
But I don't even know how much that is.
Neither do I.
And when does it go on sale?
Yeah. Yeah, just wait for it to sale. There, like, do you use Steam's wish list?
Sometimes, yeah. Not a lot. Probably not as much as I should.
I've got a lot of stuff on my wish list, and it's great because it'll just tell you when it's on sale.
Yeah. I started wish listing stuff, but then I found that when it was on sale, I didn't buy it. Yes. And then I just get annoyed at the email.
But then you're like, okay, off the wish list. Because there's been stuff like that for me where I was like, I've been on my wish list, and it'll like go on sale a few times, and I won't buy it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well then, do I really want it? Probably not, I guess.
I do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I do. I've been getting emails for Thief going on sale for years.
Thief?
For about a dollar.
Yeah, much better. I was going to say. It must be like a dollar now.
I still haven't bought it.
Nah.
I think that's the free game on Epic this month.
Too rich for my blood.
Yeah, yeah. That's also funny with Epic is that like I know they give the free games,
yeah,
but I never like look into what they are. Like I just,
yeah, I just don't care.
Yeah, it's like I just don't care anymore.
Yeah,
I pay for PlayStation Plus and I still like
half
the time don't claim the games. Mm.
Yeah, I have the Nintendo version of PlayStation Plus, which is I think objectively not good. I still pay for it because there are some great old Nintendo games. Banjo-Kazooie, the Zeldas, like there's a bunch of solid games in there. There's also some great games that they have done nothing to adapt the control scheme for.
Oh, no.
Which are unplayable.
Yeah.
For example, GoldenEye.
Oh, really?
GoldenEye,
oh,
you cannot play that game on the Switch because do you remember how you like go into aim mode in GoldenEye?
Yeah.
Use the C buttons.
Yeah.
And there's no C buttons on the controller.
Well, where are they?
Oh.
Where are they on the controller?
Can't you get the 64 controller for? Yeah.
Wait,
so.
No. So they really haven't remapped.
They have not mapped.
That's actually insane.
You have to buy.
Yes. It's deeply unpleasant.
Like that's games. Madness. Why wouldn't they just be like, oh, C is this button on the thing?
That sounds like work.
Because you could buy another controller about it.
Yeah. Maybe you should buy that other controller.
It's a little tempting. Because, for example, Jet Force Gemini.
Yeah.
Another great game from Rare.
Yeah.
And I started playing it, and it's really sucky to play on the Switch, but the game is still really solid.
Oh,
and
wow.
Has a killer soundtrack.
So does that mean they have modern-day N64 controllers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know they had that.
They thought, yeah, this everyone loves this controller. Let's do it again.
It was iconic, to be fair.
No one's confused about how to hold it at all.
Everyone I knew, we all held it differently. Everyone held it differently. What a weird
thing. The blister maker for Mario Party, rather.
Oh,
That stick.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the number of broken sticks from that game.
Yeah. I think because I've got an N64. I think all the sticks are like wobbly on it.
Of course.
On every controller I've got.
It was the very first like analog handheld like gamepad.
Yeah. You have to,
like, plug in the rumble pack.
Yep. And a memory pack.
Oh yeah.
Remember the memory pack that they used for almost nothing?
Yeah.
But like so many people bought it on day one. I had one.
Day one purchase.
I think it was used for like Wave Race.
Oh my god.
I think it was basically used to be able to transfer data to another Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was something in N64 that you could plug in Game Boy games.
Oh yep. Yep, I had that as well.
Yeah.
That was we got it for Pokemon Arena.
Yes. You got it for Pokemon Arena.
Pokemon Stadium.
Yes. Pokemon Stadium. Yeah. And you can plug in your use your Pokemon. Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. That was so cool.
And then you could straight up just play the Game Boy games.
Yeah.
On your screen.
I remember playing the Game Boy game on my screen and being like, this is incredible.
Mm-hmm. I remember when they did the same thing for the GameCube, except it was just a cable that plugged directly into your Game Boy Advance or Game Boy Advance SP.
Oh, wow.
Like, it clips in.
Yeah.
And then you'd use your Game Boy Advance SP as the controller.
Oh, that's cool.
And you just see it on the big screen. That was pretty neat.
What a time, eh?
Yeah. And now, I mean, they've kind of made slow, logical leap to the Switch, which is...
That's actually amazing. You can just do either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all started from just plugging in...
Yeah.
Plugging in Game Boy games into that.
I think the Super Nintendo might have even had a Game Boy port.
Really? Wow, yeah. I've never knew that.
Anyway, let's do one last question. Did we actually even answer the question?
I think it's like it depends on the game, right? Like,
yeah,
there's definitely games that I will buy day one, regardless. But there's still a lot of games that people are like super excited for, like Starfield, right? Heaps of people bought that game. Yeah. I still haven't bought it.
Yeah,
I used to buy Bethesda games day one. Regardless.
Yeah, I stopped buying Bethesda games day one after Skyrim. I got Skyrim.
Yeah,
I got Skyrim. I had a press version of it because I was at IGN at the time, and they canceled the press app not long after the review came out. So I was like, okay, well, I gotta go buy it then.
Yeah.
And then I remember I think it was like Fallout 4 was the next one that came out, and people weren't.
I bought that day one and was like, didn't really live up to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then it was Fallout 76.
Yeah, definitely.
And then there was like Elder Scrolls Blades. I did get that, but that was free, and I didn't pay any money, I don't think. There's another, actually, Elder Scrolls mobile game coming out.
Really?
Did you know that?
No.
I didn't know that until I was looking. I wanted to see if there was a mobile version of Elder Scrolls Daggerfall.
Right.
Which is, I think, the second
Elder Scrolls. Yeah, yeah.
And no, there is not. But there is a game called Elder Scrolls Castles.
Huh.
And I believe, from what I can see, it's a bit like the Fallout Shelter mobile game. But
Elder
Scrolls Castles. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So let's taper our excitement a little bit here. Also, keeping in mind that it is a Bethesda game.
Mm.
And Bethesda, as of late, has been, for lack of a better word, sucky.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep. Starfield is like the most amazing disappointment, I think.
It is just
No Man's Sky.
It's so interesting to me because I think you can almost trace a line of complexity of these games, and it just every generation of their games gets simpler and simpler than the last, to its detriment.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like they want to appeal to as broad a player base as possible, but it always seems to be at the cost of the game's soul.
Yeah. Yeah. might be right. Because, like, Morrowind was special.
Oh, I loved Morrowind.
Morrowind was, like, there was a lot of just... Morrowind was a game that opened my eyes to what games could be.
Yeah. It was the first open world game I played that where I felt fully immersed.
And it was not hand-holdy either. Like, very not hand-holdy.
There was a lot of freedom in what you could do, where you could go.
Yeah.
How you went about things.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, we bought the Morrowind play guide.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, 300 pages long.
Oh,
lame. It was like Bible-sized text, so it was like dense. Because there was just a lot to that game and a lot of ways to do stuff in that game. There were quests where like, oh, you need to assassinate this person? There's a poison apple you can find some way over here, and you can like put it in, you can pickpocket, put it in their inventory, and they'll just happen to eat it at some point, and they'll die, and you'll just get credit. And like, cool.
Yeah.
And like, there's just lots and lots of things in that game. What a great game. There are a lot of things that they lost from that game.
Mm.
And I've talked about this in the past, but levitation.
Oh, right. Yeah,
they
took
levitation out of Elder Scrolls games is, I think, a cardinal sin.
Weird that they did, too, because, like, especially in Skyrim, where you're scaling mountains and stuff all over the place. Like, it really, those games don't box you in.
No.
You know?
But I think that was viewed as a problem in that, like, levitation can be used as a shortcut.
But also, I mean, I would keep it in, but, like, maybe, you know, tamp it down or something, you know? Like, so it's make it more special or something, you know? Like, like a difficult thing to achieve, you
maybe.
Know?
I kind of think it's fine to have it in and let players cheat their way around. Yeah, make it a valuable commodity or whatever. But also, it's like, the way Morrowind was designed, levitation was there to help you discover secrets and story elements, and it was the best, in my opinion, one of the best parts of that game.
Mm.
Like, there were so many of these, like, Dwemer dungeons and what are the demons called? Daedra dungeons, where you'd like be in this big chamber, and then you could look up, and there might be like a weird platform off to the side, way up there, and you'd levitate up there. You'd find like a skeleton, and you'd have a note, and he does like a magical piece of gear, and it was like, this is so far out of the way. I had to do a lot of work to find it and utilize it. And then there's like those Telvanni towers that you could really only navigate through levitation, which is such a cool feature. Like, they're designed to be basically accessible you have the capacity to levitate. It's just really cool stuff. They also got rid of the like different attack types. I don't know if you remember this, but in Morrowind, you had like thrusting attacks and swinging attacks.
Yes, I do remember.
And like,
I
forget.
You basically just have heavy attack, or like hold attack and quick attack.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. That's kind of it.
I think, you know, I get why they took it out, but I kind of liked that weird feature. And you could totally make that part of the core gameplay loop. Like, a character with a shield is much better at protecting against thrusting attacks than, you know, overhead attacks, whatever it is.
Mm.
Yeah, I remember playing. The only thing that disappointed me with Skyrim was I played Skyrim not long after playing Dead Island. Remember Dead Island, that zombie game?
Yes.
And in that game, it had like you could target the zombies' limbs, and you could break their limbs or cut their limbs off, and it would affect then how the zombie moves and attacks. Mm. Like if there's like these big strong guys, so if you like cut off their arms, they sort of just like try to shuffle at you with their head, you know, like it's the Dark Knight from Monty Python, basically, like still kind of go. And then
that's pretty cool.
and you get into like real tactics depending on what monster you're fighting, of like how you basically dismember them. And then, you know, going into Skyrim, that was kind of in the back of my head. And then first time I just sort of swung at something, I aimed for parts, just instinctively, because I'd been playing it, and then was like, "Oh, that doesn't happen here." Yeah, you just like randomly hit, so it doesn't do anything.
I have one more question to read out, and I want to jump onto it, something else, because what you're talking about is relevant.
Oh,
but well, this is from Slippery Jim. He says there's a mod early in Witcher 3. There's a mod early Witcher 3 launch that made every combat encounter a Gwent game. Fighting the Griffin in a game of Gwent was an experience. Not sure if it's still updated, but I've always wanted to do a whole playthrough like that. Honestly,
it just becomes Yu-Gi-Oh, right?
Yeah, or
that's Yu-Gi-Oh. You just go around.
There was a Pokemon Game Boy game that was a card game.
Oh, really?
And it followed the Pokemon structure, but it was just the card game.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
In fact, you can get it now on the Nintendo Switch Play Pass. All right. So the reason I wanted to talk about things straight after what Blake said is I've been playing a game called Kenshi.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes.
And Kenshi is, I think, so much Blake's kind of game that I'm shocked he hasn't got it.
Well, you messaged me about this earlier in the week, and I knew about that game. It had been advertised to me for years.
Yeah.
On Steam, being like, hey, you might like this game.
And you're like, this is too much my kind of game.
Yeah.
I might never play it a day again.
I watched gameplay of it. Like, I have legitimately thought about buying it, and I've watched gameplay of it.
Blake.
And
the number of games you've bought that are steaming garbage.
That's the thing. I was worried that this game would be as well, because like everything I've seen.
Oh no!
Of it...
Another one for your collection. You would have blown $15. I think. Let me tell you about this game, because I think you're gonna love it.
All right.
So, it is an RTS RPG hybrid,
mm-hmm.
And it feels a lot like Mount and Blade, and for X4 combined. You start off, I mean, there's lots of different ways to start off the game. First of all,
mm-hmm.
there's like 10 different game starts. Mm. Your basic one is like, you're just a dude, you've got 1,000 coins.
Yep.
And go figure off it and out. Do a thing. And by the way, there's no, as far as I can tell, there's no win condition, no end state.
This
is, again, the perfect game to play. So there's like the standard one is like the Wanderer. Yeah, 1,000 coins. Basically nothing in your bag but a sword, and you go off and do your thing. There's versions where it's like you're 5 dudes with basically nothing.
RTS.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get you now. Okay.
There's one where it's like you are 2 dudes who have been captured and you're in a slave encampment.
And the
first thing you have to do is get out of the slave encampment.
And
that can take a really, really, really long time. There's one where you start off being attacked like dozens and dozens and dozens of cannibals, and you were 2 guys, and you definitely get caught and put in cages. And if you don't escape fast enough or figure out a way to escape fast enough, you get eaten.
Wow.
Mm. That's how you start the game.
Yeah.
So there's just lots of different ways to start the game. I'm going to just go with like standard Wanderer.
Yeah.
It is a really slow buildup. It has a lot of the Mount and Blade feel in that sense, in that you start off as one guy. It takes quite a while before you can get like a buddy.
Mm.
And then like, you generally, like, you're mining or you're trying to, like, lure bandits to a town so the town guards attack them, and then you loot the bodies. You get 2 guys, and then you basically double your output, get a third. The thing is, unlike Mount and Blade, where it's like you can go to a village and recruit dudes pretty much whenever. If you remember in Mount and Blade, they're, like, hero characters. Like, they'd have special names. You'd go to, like, a tavern. They'd have, like, a special background.
Yes, there are, yes. And they can lead other armies.
Yes. This game is basically, as far as I can tell, you can only recruit the hero kinds.
Oh.
So there's, like, a pretty limited pool of dudes you can recruit from. And you can, I think you can hire mercenaries, but mercenaries are really expensive. I've never done it. There's, like, quite a lot of crafting depth to this game.
Hmm.
So, like, the version I'm playing as the Wanderer, I'm running around just kind of get my money up and get my group up so that I can eventually figure out a place to build a village. And I've started building a village.
Oh, you build a village?
Yeah. Oh, now you're interested, aren't you? Aren't you?
Wait, did you tell me there's some village management happening?
There's lots of... This game has a lot of depth in really interesting ways. So combat. Let's talk about combat. Don't fight animals.
Oh, yeah?
Don't fight animals because they're really strong. Hungry bandits, they'll also kick your butt.
Hmm.
Generally, anything will kill you for like the first 10 or 20 hours of the game.
Right. Okay.
Oh, man.
It's a really hard, really hard game. But the thing is, when you lose a fight, you have a good chance of the game not ending. If everyone in your party is knocked down, and everyone is like bleeding out, then you'll probably lose. But like, there's a good chance that like one person will, you know, maybe their injuries are so bad they're unconscious, but they're not like actively losing blood.
Mm.
They can revive, and then you can like bandage up the rest of your party. They'll usually be in a recovery coma for a while.
Oh.
So you could have one character pick up another character and lug it around.
Wow.
sometimes, as what happened when I tried to do the 5-person start, you'll get attacked by like giant red spiders.
Oh god!
And they'll rip a limb off of a character, and that limb's just gone. Whoa. The game just adapts to that.
Oh wow!
So, like, you're crawling around. My guy lost a leg, and so he was just crawling around from that point on. Now, I could have gone to a village and tried to buy a robotic leg.
Oh, okay.
To, like, use a prosthetic.
Yeah.
Which is totally a thing you can do, but I didn't know where the closest village was.
Yeah.
You can get prosthetic arms and limbs. If you wait too long to, like, bandage a limb, I think it might just die.
Oh, wow.
There's just so much depth. And the combat adapts to all of this. So, like, on a character, when you select a character, you see, like, a bunch of different health bars. But you're like blood health bar, your head, your stomach, your chest.
Oh boy.
Left leg, right leg, left arm, right arm.
Yep.
That might be all of them. And they, every time they take combat damage, they are taking combat damage to a specific part or multiple parts.
Yeah,
I see.
And if they lose, like if too much health is lost from an arm, they won't swing as hard, or they'll just lose use of that arm.
Mm.
Which means, for example, they can't pick up another party member who's downed.
Mm-hmm.
They lose a leg, they might just be limping, or they might have to crawl, like if they lose too much health. It's just a lot of depth to it.
Yeah.
And then as they're like start healing over time, and it takes quite a while unless you like find a bed to rest in, which still takes like a really long time to recover.
Yeah.
They'll start like gaining experience in their toughness so that maybe not so they don't take so much damage next time.
Okay.
When you're running around mining stuff, running increases your athletic skill, so you run faster, unless you're carrying a bunch of weight, in which case it increases your strength.
Yeah.
Carrying more. So it all adapts to your different gameplay style.
Huh.
It's really a very interesting, fascinating game.
Yeah.
I will say, it is really, really hard to get into. And the UI is very, very different.
How much have you played?
It's a good question. Probably 10, 15 hours.
Okay, so it's only just starting to...
It's starting to come together for me.
Yeah.
I had done multiple different attempts of different kinds of playthrough and failed at all of them one way or another. The first time I played, I think I died almost instantaneously. And it was like, well, this is a fun game.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, there's some bandits. And they ran over and attacked because I had some food on me. And then I was unconscious, then I bled out. And then the game doesn't end. That's the thing. So if my character dies, it just shows the character's body slowly rotting.
Oh my god, what?
And it's up to you to just start over.
Yeah,
wow,
exactly.
What?
I do kind of like that as an intro to a game.
Yeah.
It gives you a good
idea
of what you're getting into.
Yes. Now, I haven't. There may be like depths to the combat that I haven't figured out yet. It seems like a lot of dice rolling happening based on your stats and a bunch of other stuff going on. Like, I don't think characters, for example, have skills. You can give them different weapons. You can have ranged weapons. There's quite a deep itemization system. So each character can have like a helmet, pants, chest, two different kinds of weapon.
So it is very like equipping Mountain Blade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like I said, it's like having a party of only heroes.
Yeah.
And they'll talk to each other.
Oh, neat.
And, you know, when they die, they're dead from the world.
Yeah.
So you can't just go out and get another one. And it is really, going between villages is harrowing. Like, genuinely, I'll make sure everyone's healed up. I'll spend, like, you know, days mining ore just to get enough bandages and food to go from one village to the next.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's, I think, your kind of game, Blake.
Yeah.
The only game, well, the first game I can think of that gave me that kind of feeling was this War of Mine.
Yes. Oh,
where every time before you go out, you're like, for the most part, in a worse state you were than the day before, and you're just trying to like make it through another stealing session, raiding session.
Because this War of Mine, I played that, and it had a slowly circling the drain feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Does this have that, or are you? Is there a point where you're just like, okay, I'm getting somewhere now?
I think it really depends.
You gotten to a point where you're like, okay, I'm getting somewhere now?
I did in one, and then spiders tore my legs off.
Oh,
and,
no.
I was like, oh, actually.
Do you just have to play ultra cautiously?
Yeah, I think
like
so.
Like, if you see a monster you've never encountered before,
you stay away.
You just stay away.
You can click on it and you can see its stats.
Okay.
And, but generally, if it's not human, it's probably really strong. And if it is human, it's probably strong.
Yeah.
my current playthrough is probably the best I've done so far.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to put two buildings down and put some walls around it. Ooh. And I've got a farm. And
nice.
So like I'm slowly inching towards like being able to produce some food.
Yeah.
So that I'm not trying to ferry between multiple villages. And,
yep.
Carrying loads of copper and iron.
So
to buy some dried meat.
Like, do you have a hunger gauge that you need to constantly?
There is a hunger gauge. Now here's the thing: I don't know that you can die from hunger, but hunger does affect all of your stats.
Mm. Yeah.
So like I when I was a slave, for example, I noticed that at least for the NPC slaves, the hunger would just sort of float around.
Yeah.
100, which is like starving, versus like the 300, which is like you're fine.
Yeah. I actually like because like survival games have that whole thing, you can die from starvation, but I actually like survival games where you don't die from starvation, but the food gives you boosts instead. Like Valheim does that, where it's like you eat three different types of food and your health gets like a huge boost, your stamina gets a huge boost, but you never die from hunger. If you don't have any food, you just have a small health pool and a small stamina pool.
Yeah.
That's it.
This probably feels a bit similar. Like you just have all your stats are lower.
Yeah.
You move.
I like that. I mean, the world sounds brutal enough.
Oh, it's so brutal. and they've got it's a really interesting world that they've put you in. It's post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
And so there's like all these ruins that kind of resemble things you might recognize, but not like it's not Earth, but it's like, oh, these are clearly big iron structures that fell down.
Okay.
This was once in like an iron mine or whatever, and now it's covered in robots. By the way, I found a place that had robot spiders, and
it
one shot two of my characters, and I was like, yeah, cool, I'm not going there. There are all these new cultures in place. There's like humans, but then there's like kind of like scaly dudes, and there's robots, and there's like hive people, and
are there factions like in X4?
Yes, there's like the Holy Order, which is like it's really interesting because they'll like run up to you and be like, "Hey, brother, you look like you could use some help. Here's a ration." If you're part of their faction, and if you're not, they're like, do you swear fealty to blah blah blah? And if you don't, they'll straight up kill you. And like,
well, is that? I mean, is that a good survival thing to be like, I'll join a faction and now I'm.
I faked it. I was like, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Give me some food, but they'll also like burn women at the stake, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So like, it really depends on who's in your party, what they look like, what you're carrying.
Yeah.
I ended up stealing armor from one who had gotten killed.
Hmm.
Like one of the guards of this town got killed.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh sweet, some armor. I'll grab it. And as soon as I grabbed it, they're like, that's our armor!" And they swarmed me and killed me.
Oh my god!
Can you save? Save game.
You can
like
save
whenever you want.
Yeah, you can save scum if you want.
Yeah,
but and I kind of not like really extensively. It auto saves every 10 minutes anyway.
Mm. Okay,
so I kind of just rely on that.
Yeah.
Sometimes like save scumming in some things is just like figuring out what you can do and what you can't do. Like, how are people going to react if you're wearing this armor?
Well, I was about to say that.
Are they going to think, dear fellow guard, or are they going to be like, hey, you're not that...
Depending on your stealth skill, it will be either.
Oh, wow.
So if you have a high stealth skill, they have a disguise system. You can pretend to be part of them.
Oh,
and if you get caught, they will freak out and they will attack you.
Yep.
There's like a ton of depth.
Hmm.
So really, like, I'm just shocked. This is not a game that has been... It clearly has not been on your radar.
Oh, yeah.
And you said to me that you were thinking about getting the sequel, which didn't ask.
Because they have a sequel in the works.
Yeah. The thing is, as I said in our chat, this one took 12 years to develop.
Yeah.
So I would not hold your breath for the sequel. I would try this one.
All right.
It cheap.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, it's honestly advertised to me like... Once every 2 weeks, at least. Like,
well, they made
so
it for
often.
You.
Yeah, I like to imagine there's a guy sitting in Valve, looking at your list, going, "I just don't get it. He doesn't have. Look at all these games he's got, and he doesn't have Kenshi."
It's like every single game I go to, that's like, you might like this. That Kenshi is like always.
Yeah, I'm shocked you don't have it.
Yeah.
Honestly,
the only thing that put me off is that it looked maybe too jank.
It's really, really ugly looking.
Yeah, that is the kind of thing. That is actually what put me off.
Yeah.
Really, is how ugly it looked.
It looks like do you remember? I mean, it looks like a 2002 era MMO.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
And that makes sense when you realize it was one guy who made most of it for a really long time. And he probably
started it in 2000.
He's probably using Gamebryo or something like really old, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't really know what he was using, but it looks like an old engine.
Yeah.
And it suffers from technical issues that are a sign of its age more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the level of thought and depth that has gone into that game, and the variety of ways you can play it, and also just the general framework of it makes me think this is Blake's game, and I don't understand why he's not playing it all day, every day.
All right. Well, I'm going to buy it then.
Okay, good. I don't think there's a multiplayer mod. If there is, I would be keen to find it and try it out.
So it's learning curve.
So steep.
Steeper than X4?
Oh, good question. I would say in terms of its readability, X4 is completely inscrutable, right? Unless you need to go watch videos and listen to people.
You need to Google
and figure
so
out where the menu is the thing that you're...
X4 is a little bit like a really complex board game in that the only way to learn how to play it is to talk to someone who has already learned how to play that board game.
Yeah.
You need someone to tell you the rules.
someone who has played it multiple times and said, oh, I know all this because I learned it from some other guy who had played it multiple times.
Yeah.
It has that virality kind of explanation.
Yeah.
This is not quite to that level, but it's close. There are lots and lots of menus, lots and lots of systems, and they all interact in interesting ways, and it's kind of hard to navigate some of the elements.
Interesting.
But the difficulty curve itself is brutal. It is much harder than X4.
Yeah.
In X4, once you know how to use the game, it's not hard.
Yeah. Like my second playthrough now of X4, I've breezed through stuff.
Yeah.
That was, I found difficult before, just because I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. The difficulty in X4 is the economy and the actual layer of systems.
Yeah. Like it's just knowing what you're doing. That is it. But it sounds like in this game, it's like actually the world will just kill you.
In this game, the world is very hostile.
Yeah.
Everything is pretty much out to get you. I mean, there are like herbivores and stuff that won't necessarily straight up attack you. There are herbivores that will attack you if you get like too close to them or do things that might seem as aggression.
Yeah.
And like one of the characters, one of my little NPC guys was like, if you stand still, they won't bother you.
Oh,
like he's telling that to another NPC who's nearby.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I was like, great, I'm just gonna.
I was literally just gonna ask, how do you know how things act, like without them just murdering you?
Yeah, yeah. You learn either through gameplay or through context.
But that's good if they've got context in there, because I hate that in games when it's like the only way to learn how a monster does anything is to just die by it.
Yeah,
and that's not really.
I will say that this game. There's probably mods that makes a lot of the friction elements nicer. Like there are things that are not, as far as I can tell, designed to be difficult but aren't difficult. So for example, if you're mining ore, what you're expecting is right click on another thing and they'll go and mine it and then their inventory will fill up with the ore. What actually happens is you click a character, you right click on the ore, they'll start mining it, and then the mine's inventory will fill up with ore. You then have to move into that character's inventory.
Weird.
And there are like advantages to this. So, for example, you can like just set a character to mine and not worry about their inventory filling up.
Mm.
If they've got a full inventory, you're still getting good labor out of that
character. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm. And then you could have a different character just run over, grab the ore, and run to town.
I get it. So it's like it's a bit like Farthest Frontier or a lot of like village management games.
Yeah.
If you put down a mine or a lumber yard, there'll be a resource that there'll be a stock of resources that build up in the lumber camp before it's taken to the thing. And you can have a different person doing a different job that's taking stuff back and forth. And the laborer can just stay at the resource and basically never have to go back to wherever.
Yeah.
You know.
So there's that kind of thing. But
it's also not very intuitive.
It's not very intuitive, and like the cap for the copper mine is like 5 ore.
Yeah,
and then the dudes would stop working.
Oh man, okay.
And so
then you Google like why am I guys not working, and then you find out about
it. Yeah. So there's lots of little things like that where it's like there's probably a good reason for the system to be set this way.
Yeah,
but it's not intuitive, and it's just kind of a little bit heinous in its limitations.
Yeah.
But I think there are probably ways around a lot of these aspects that I have not yet figured out. Like, there are probably ways to set up orders to loot things and sell things. And
A bit
like X4 in that sense.
Yeah, it does feel like that. Like, if you had someone that you automate to be like, I want you to always go here, pick up this already mined stuff, move it to here. And then I want you to just always mine here and just fill up that mine inventory. Yeah. You know, like, I get it. But I guess the initial thing of like, oh, a mine, I want to click on that and have my character think. Nope.
Nope. So it feels like the love child of X4. And
yeah, it's like it's like they've got the village, a sort of village management system at a stage of the game that is not the village management stuff. Like, you're just roaming around as a crew and you're like, oh, here's something I'm gonna mine.
Yeah,
except it acts as if it's like you have a village
already.
Yeah, pretty much.
So this just, anyway, you should play this game. I don't understand why you don't have it yet.
Honestly,
why are you not buying it right now?
Honestly, it was just it was just the look.
Yeah,
like I'm you know, I'll judge a game by its cover.
I strongly suspect it's got a pretty huge community. I was like,
yeah, I know it does. I know.
I checked on Reddit,
yeah,
and they have like 130,000 people in there.
It is a big game. I know. It's Reddit. Like, it's
so,
it's like, yeah.
I'm certain you can get mods that will make the game prettier.
Yeah.
But
there's only so much you can do with mods.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes. That is true. And I think that there are some pretty hefty technical limitations to that game.
That sounds cool. All right. I will get it then.
Paul.
Hello. What?
Have you been playing anything?
I've just been playing more Bellator.
Yeah.
I pretty much stopped even playing Final Fantasy, and I've just been playing Bellator.
Oh, my God, man.
I've been playing Bellator as well. Is it Bellator?
I have no idea.
We'll call it Poker.
Yeah.
Super Poker. No, we won't call it that. We'll call it Bellator. sorry I ever said it. Blake, cut that out.
Hmm?
Cut it out. Cut out the thing I said.
I'm going to keep it in.
Yeah, probably.
That's the intro
this
now.
Episode is now going to be called Super Poker or something.
Super Poker,
you know,
yeah.
Just because of one,
one really
whimsical comment.
So, what do you think of it, Paul?
I'm pretty sure they made that game for people like me.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to burn out on it because I played a fair bit of it. I beat like all the basic decks.
Yep.
I think I beat one or two special decks as well.
Oh right, yeah.
Like the antique one or whatever. Like, they've got some ones that have special quirks to them that you get from beating the basic one.
Yeah.
Some of the things I've noticed about that game, it can be very hard to get a run that works with some of those decks in their default state.
Yeah.
Unless you funnel down like a pretty reliable strategy.
I think that's kind of the trick to it, is to start with a similar sort of strategy with most of them.
Yeah.
Then pivot around anti 2 or 3, depending on what jokers you get.
Yeah.
3 or 4, sorry.
But that's what I think what I don't super like about that game. There are lots and lots and lots of jokers.
Yes.
And you can often get ones that are completely not suitable for your deck. Like, you can be an anti.
Yeah, but that's like roguelike randomness, right?
Yes and no. You can skew rarities. Like, and they have rarities in that game. They have common, uncommon,
yes,
rare.
Yeah.
I got my first legendary.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, I've forgotten the name of it. It was the one where I think you get a copy of a negative copy of a consumable in your hand at the end of the run.
I haven't even seen that one.
It's really good.
Yeah.
But like,
I've only seen 2 legendaries, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. There's things I really like about that game, and there are some things that I think are a little too broad, and result in like inconsistent levels of fun and accessibility. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
In a way that like most roguelikes will give you some sort of avenue, or at least a good roguelike will give you an avenue to victory, even when you're kind of getting duds.
Yeah. It's pretty rare that you actually have a run that's a complete flop, though. Like, I've had runs where you just don't get any jokers with mulch, and that is just a non-starter.
Yeah.
But it's pretty rare for me to not have a chance until I got to the really high difficulty. Gold difficulty was like a different story.
Oh, you're doing the stakes?
Yeah. Mm. So I did the same thing. I went through and did the first difficulty on all the decks. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to unlock the later decks. So I went through and did all the stakes.
What's your main deck, I guess?
The one that I beat gold on was the yellow deck where you start with $10. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just because it gave you a little bit of extra funds early on so that you could start ramping.
Yes.
And because you're sort of with the gold, they are changing it, but the current way gold works is that you only start with 2 discards total.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that on the first boss, you probably haven't found anything to give you enough malt to scale. So you need to get 2 good hands.
Yeah.
But with the extra bit of money, you can pick up one extra thing that means that you can sort of get through that.
Yes.
And then I did a bunch of the challenges as well. I've done half the challenges.
Nice. Now, the gold thing, like the money thing, the gold, the reason the gold deck is strong.
Yep.
This is something I noticed as well, which is that money is king in that game.
Yes.
For most of the game.
It
counters random, and it can also fuel power. There are jokers that will take into account how much cash you've got.
The bull.
There's one.
The boat or something. It's a shoe that's... Yes,
exactly. It gives you malt per...
2.
Per 5 or whatever.
Yeah. 2 malt per $5, I think you have.
And then there's like... also just the fact that you can generate interest.
Yep.
Interest
is capped though, which is kind of interesting.
But there are ways... 2 different ways to increase the cap.
Yep. So but one of those is a joker, so.
Yes. There's like 2 different vouchers. Anyway.
Yes.
There's like lots of different... You can end up getting like 20 gold per turn just in interest, I think.
Yep.
Which is more than you can get from just gameplay. Like twice as much as you'll typically get from doing a perfect round. Which I think is maybe one of my biggest issues with the game, is that... So money is the main way that you advance your meta progression,
mm-hmm.
right? It's how you create your build. But the way you get money is unrelated to performance at some point. It is more about not spending and you get rewarded for not engaging with the systems.
I see it more as you get rewarded for being very careful about where you're spending your resources early on.
Yep.
Because if you just spend it all and don't gain any interest, then you're sort of falling behind.
Yes.
Whereas if you wait and play a round that you're less likely to beat because you haven't spent it, then...
Yes. So then you get more money and you get more interest and then you run faster. So this is the crux of my point.
Yep.
So the best way to play Balatro is to not spend anything in your first ante, right?
Yes, but you can't do that on the higher difficulties.
Yeah. Really, not at all. You probably have to get lucky, right? You could probably get a royal
with
flush.
With 2 discards... and 4 total hands, it is very, very hard to...
Now, I want to make a distinction here.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It's uncommon.
Yes. Very rare.
This is sort of my issue. Mm. Is that because of the way the money works, the optimal way to play Balatro is luck-based initially. It is get the right hands in those first 3 rounds, give or take, depending on whether or not you skip blinds, to get enough to generate interest for the remainder of the game. So basically, it's like play optimal hands in those first 3 rounds, spend no money, generate interest, and you'll be set up to potentially reliably win. But that first ante requires you to not spend, and rather than get to ante 7 and fail because you didn't generate enough interest, it's faster to fail ante one over and over and over and over and over again until you get a perfect run, basically. And that's what I don't super like about it. The optimal strategy is to
restart. I don't really play that way. Because you can pivot and make most things. You can pivot and make a lot of good builds without playing the most optimal economy. Or not playing for the most optimal economy.
Do you think that's going to remain true at the highest stakes?
Yes.
Mm.
Well, at least it did with gold, with the yellow deck.
Is gold
Okay. I haven't tried any of the others, and they are changing completely how the yellow, how the higher antes work in the. They're doing like a beta test at the moment of the next patch where they've taken away the minus one discard thing.
Okay.
The minus one discard thing is weird. I think it probably is bad. Because it means that like you really only have four hands and two discards to make.
Yeah. And you often end up
two good hands.
Hands to function as discards when you run out of discards.
Yeah, yeah, it's like exactly.
High card plus all of my bad cards.
Yep. And then and that that's $1 less that you get at the end of the round because you had to do that.
Yes. It's don't get me wrong. I really like the game.
Yep.
I just think there are some design flaws. Or maybe not even flaws, but things that I think push players to do unhealthy gameplay things.
Yeah, that might be fair.
And I would love to see, for example, I think the main thing I would love to see is a review of how the money works. Because it is so heavily weighted towards interest and growth and less about playing well within a round. The rewards, the maximum rewards you can get for playing well within a round are dependent on your jokers.
Yep.
And which means that you're already potentially subbing in a different money-making joker. For example, one that gives you 2 coins per discard. Right?
Hmm.
And
if you use no discards.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So it requires you to play really well, be lucky, and then you get a little extra cash, but you might have gotten as much extra cash or more from a different joker, either just giving you bonus interest or just the egg that grows 3 coins every turn, or the one that grows all of your cell values by 1 every turn. Like, there's a bunch of other ones that generate as much or more and don't have a weird condition on them. And as a result, but those also don't take into account what you're doing within a round.
Yeah.
I want a review of that, please. Thank you. Like, Balatro, when? If you can email frenziedquestions@gmail.com, just say, Blake, Balatro, when?
I think I'm with our listener. Card games, nah. Put me right off.
Yeah. But you play Gwent.
Yeah, put me right off. Put me right off of The Witcher.
Never played The Witcher
never,
again?
Never finished The Witcher.
I'm curious to see how this patch goes. How much time we got left? We're basically out of time.
We're right on the hour. Yeah. All right.
I will
say just quickly going back to The Witcher. You got all the DLCs, right?
Yes.
You're saying like you and Paul were saying earlier that you know these maps are huge, you know.
Yeah.
There's an entire
there's a whole other
giant
zone I haven't been yet.
Other map that's as big as the you know the main map.
Yeah.
In one of those DLCs.
I'm excited.
And that's the one I never finished.
I'm excited to get there. I don't know when I'll get there. I don't even know if I'll get there.
Have you met the people that will take you there?
I've got a quest.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I've met the people that'll take me there, but I've got multiple quests that seem to imply like it's level 25 quests that I had since the start of the game.
Oh, okay. Oh, maybe.
That were, I think, heavily implied to be.
Because you go meet these people, and they're like emissaries from this other land.
Mm.
But it's cool. Like, the other land is real, it's like a, I don't know, like a Spanish-Italian kind of vibe.
Mm.
Like,
okay.
Like a real Mediterranean vibe.
Nice.
Like, villas on the hills and wine fields and...
It's called Blood and Wine, so that makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah, good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Makes sense. It does make sense, yeah.
And there's the wine.
And there's lots of
the
blood.
The wine and the blood.
So much blood.
Whoa, did we just get like a Trump impression?
What?
All right.
Best blood.
So much blood. Blood for days, folks. Cut that out.
Blood for
cut
days.
That out. Cut that out. All right. Well, we'll be back in a couple weeks, probably.
Couple weeks, I think. Yeah.
Yep. Email frenziedquestions@gmail.com. What was that?
Paul? Oh, no. I don't think I'll be here in a couple weeks.
We'll be back in 3 weeks.
Yep.
Probably.
Email frenziedquestions@gmail.com, and that you can say, Paul, why?
Yeah.
Paul, why aren't you going to be here in a couple weeks? No, don't tell us. No.
Just full time.
Yeah, okay.
Quit.
Yeah, he'll be playing Pilatro. Email him, and you might find out. We might find out. We might not. Paul's a mystery.
Probably just going to the gym. Playing Pilatro.
Yeah, he's probably. We'll be back at some point. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you. Bye! Put it on the table, right?
No, do you want the table moved closer?
Yeah. Where's the table?
There.
This?
Yeah.
The cardboard box?
Yeah.
The cardboard box with the cutting board?
Yeah, that's a table. That's a table. That's a table.
Like, love you, buddy.
I'm not spending money. I'm not spending good money on a table.
Table.
when a breadboard. I got
the funny thing is, it's the cutting actually board, the perfect size. Yeah. And if you got anything else, like it would be impossible to find something with a similar form factor.
I think a bedside table would be quite similar in terms of height and size.
Yeah, I've also got a cardboard box as my bedside table.
Oh my god! Like,
but I need to buy a breadboard.
I'm not sure if you knew this, but they sell tables.
I need a sell breadboards as well because that breadboard that is perfect for like it's perfect. I've looked at bedside tables and I'm like, none of them are just as basic as that. Like, what? It's perfect. Why am I buying a bedside
It's perfect.
Table? Yeah. Just don't get it wet.
What happens if someone spills something?
Yeah, just don't spill anything on it.
What? As long as you spill it only on a coffee.